Welcome to Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn, a fan just like you, right here on the MLW Radio Network, brought to you by our good friends over at WrestleZone.com, the world's most widely read internet site on the planet. And this is our sixth daily show. It's Sunday. Who in the hell listens to a wrestling podcast on Sunday? Well, we're going to make Sunday's destination podcast listening for you. And the reason is starting this week, Sundays are going to be This Week in Wrestling, where I give you the top five stories of the week, give you some insight on them, give you the whole story in case you don't have time to keep up with all this stuff, and give you some opinions. Of course, you can give me some opinions right back over on Twitter at Matt Kuhn Music or at Total Engage Show. So that's what we have today, This Week in Wrestling on Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn. Coming in as our number five story of the week is something that really shouldn't be a story, but it's that AEW Full Gear did not sell out. It is not sold out yet. It's been on sale for a few days. It did not sell out instantly. It really shouldn't be a story, because AEW has exceeded pretty much anybody's expectations for pay-per-view buy rates, for sales. They've got TV. They've got all this stuff going on. And just because somebody like me points us out, again, doesn't mean I'm an AEW hater. A matter of fact, I'm accused of being an AEW fanboy. But the reason this is considered a story is because when All Out went on sale, it was claimed by some, namely one, that it was the most demand for any wrestling event ever. And I haven't really heard an explanation if they just had the most demand of any wrestling event ever and also had the greatest ladder match of all time, according to the same source. And according to the same source, if they could, if they had a big enough building, they could have sold 137,000 tickets that day. Now, on a previous episode, I went through the math of that, showed why it was ludicrous, made some people upset, but definitely it's no knock on AEW, because AEW is doing fantastic. The issue is, I hope that nobody over at AEW feels disappointed about this, because there are some factors. You know, it's not a holiday weekend. The other pay-per-views, the big pay-per-views, Double or Nothing, All Out, All In, took place Labor Day, Memorial Day. Also, it's not really this destination place like Chicago or Las Vegas where people will plan a trip around it. It's Baltimore, so you're going to have drive-in. It's going to sell out because you have people all the way from Virginia, where I live, all the way to Connecticut. So that includes Philadelphia, includes New York, includes, of course, Washington, D.C. And, of course, speaking of D.C., that's another reason it may have had trouble selling out initially, which is because it's in such close proximity to D.C., just over a month past the TV taping that they're going to hold at the MCI Center. I don't even know what they call it now. That building in Washington, D.C., which literally is like an hour away. So those are the factors. It's not a disappointment, the fact that they've already sold out more tickets than Raw did. But it is a story if you believe All Out was the wrestling event that had the most demand for tickets of all time. That's right. Someone went on the record and said that. It's not really a story because AEW is still going to sell out. And Cody and Jericho, to me, is fire. Number four on This Week in Wrestling, the Killer Cross situation. Of course, if you don't know who Killer Cross is, as I say, you definitely should. Killer Cross is probably one of the biggest names out there that's not signed by AEW or WWE or New Japan. He's with Impact Wrestling. He's pretty much the whole package. He looks great. He's young. He does great promos. He has a great character, and he can wrestle. He's also associated with one Scarlett Bordeaux, who, as you know, also has a huge upside in the business as well. But it was reported that he asked for his release from Impact Wrestling in May. And apparently, Impact doesn't pay very well, and he's got some other options. And as the story goes, at the recent Slammiversary on July 7th, he lost a First Blood match to Eddie Edwards, and he refused to do a blade job. He refused to cut himself, so they had to go out and find some fake blood. And he was concerned that there was a lack of blood testing and lack of an on-site doctor. To me, those are fucking super valid. If you're going to cut yourself and have blood and your blood and somebody else's blood mixing together, you should definitely have blood testing. And you should probably have a doctor if you know for a fact you're going to be cut. And As a result, he hasn't been booked to appear in July, August, or September television tapings, and the two sides are negotiating, and his contract supposedly ends in December, but Impact can roll it over for another year. PW Insider Mike Johnson, Mike is reporting that Cross is going to maybe hire a lawyer, and that there was a new contract offered for 3 years, with that 3-year contract paying him $40,000, $60,000, and $80,000 over the life of the deal. Now, that deal was something that was offered, but a source now said those numbers are outdated and that the newer figures are much higher. And Johnson goes on to say for PW Insider that it says a lot about Cross that he has the professionalism to keep working for the promotion, even though they had this impasse. Now, he's not working for them right now because of the whole hubbub about the blading and all that. What's going to happen with all this? I don't know. I reached out to Killer Cross. He was kind enough to get back to me, but he told me, in a way, it was a very cool way he said it. He said, the universe is not ready for me to talk right now. I just need to hang back and let things happen. And if you ever watch his videos on Twitter or anything that he posts, a very smart dude, a guy with a bright future, and I have no doubt that that guy knows what he's doing. I hope it all works out for him. I doubt it's going to work for him in Impact. Number three story of the week, there was a shakeup that took place in the WWE writing teams. Now, a lot of this centered around Ryan Ward. Ryan Ward was the lead writer of NXT when, like, shit was really good. And he was moved to the main roster, and then he was on SmackDown. And now he's out of SmackDown. And I believe he's the one who replaced Road Dogg as kind of the head writer over there. And they moved Ed Koski, who's been there for 18 years, and they moved him to be the lead writer for SmackDown. He's going to be working for Eric Bischoff, they say. I hear conflicting things about the Bischoff thing. According to The Observer, which I still recommend no matter what, the issue this week was really good, by the way. A lot of good historical stuff in it. But it says he'll be working for Eric Bischoff in The Observer. But at the same time, I hear things that Bischoff's not very involved. I'm going to think if he's there, he's probably pretty involved. It goes on to say in The Observer that the change has a lot to do with Vince McMahon, who every week came in, saw the shows that Ryan Ward was writing, believed that he had to rewrite them, tore them up, and wrote them over again. And sometimes it was within an hour of the show airing that he would come in, rip it up, and start over again. That's not something he's had to do with Raw, which Koski had been the head writer of under Paul Heyman. The new lead writer of Raw is Jonathan Bechstrom. He was the head writer of 205 Live, although he hasn't been there for a few weeks. Chad Barbash is another writer who's now become the head writer of 205 Live, even though he's kind of been filling that role the last few weeks. So to take a picture of what it looks like now, you've got Bischoff is the creative director over at SmackDown, and working under him is Ed Koski, a guy who's been in the company for 18 years. I'm not sure what the power dynamic there will be. And then over at Raw, you've got, of course, Paul Heyman running things, and under him is Jonathan Bechstrom, who's been there for a few weeks, so they probably know what he can do. He's the head writer. And Chad Ward is out. Chad Ward is taking a personal leave. Not sure what happened there. But if I'm guessing, I'm thinking that this is another move that doesn't bode well for the Triple H power, because I'm thinking that this kid, if he's a kid, if he's a young guy, sounds like a young guy. I mean, his name's Ryan. I think of the guy from The Office. But it sounds like he's probably a Triple H guy if he was the head writer during the height of NXT. And it might speak, it could, I don't know, I'm just guessing, it could speak to even more power being shifted away from Triple H and more of a buttress being put up to a future power change to Triple H. But what do I know? I'm just a fan. Story number two, the shift from the older wrestling journalist to the younger wrestling journalist, and perhaps what we have as a new number one wrestling journalist in professional wrestling. Of course, I've had my issues with a couple of the writers, but this isn't personal because I still enjoy their work. I still subscribe to The Observer, and I will defend Dave from any kind of, you know, piggybacking of any issue I have, of personal attacks. None of that. Would never sanction any of that. If I say motherfucker or something like that, it's just the way I talk. It's not personal. Wade Keller, again, I subscribe to The Torch. I have for a long time. Bruce Mitchell, someone I've known for a long time. I've noticed a shift the last couple years from the older writers to the younger writers, and I did when I worked with Russo. Now, people who didn't listen to the Russo show, as soon as I got the job, the association with Vince right away had them write me off. There were a a segment of people that said, fuck this guy. But there was a segment of people that were very fair. And I'm talking about the younger writers. I'm talking about David Bixenspan. I'm talking about a Ryan Satin. I'm talking about a Sean Ross Sapp. And Mike Johnson, by the way, is somewhere in the middle. I wouldn't consider him an older guy. He's not one of the younger guys, but he does a good job. He just works for a wrestling site that has 20 pop-ups, but Mike Johnson himself is a great reporter. But these younger guys, Satin, Sean Ross Sapp, Bixenspan, and a few others that I'm not thinking of right now, they were fair. They look at things without the bias. Now, I'm not saying that the older guys have a bias. I'm just saying they're older guys. And older guys get dug into what they believe. They have a certain narrative. They have a certain way of seeing things. They do have a certain bias, as much as all of us have a bias in the fact that we're all human. And the Meltzers and the Kellers should take pride in the fact that what they did has given birth to these younger, idealistic, hardworking, innovative, creative talents like Sapp and Bixenspan and Satin. And also a shout out to Rich Fan of PW Torch, because I'm going to talk about that in a second too. Another younger guy. I've met pretty much all these guys. And of course, I can't leave out Brian Alvarez, who I guess I'd consider an older guy, but he looks super young and he does have his biases. So I would put him in the older category, except he's super entertaining. So I dig listening to his shows. In any case, there's no better example to me of the transition to the integrity, to the credibility, to the energy, to the idealism of this young group than what happened this week in the scrum of All Elite Wrestling. Now, for some people who don't know what a scrum is, it's a badass term, right? Scrum is like what you do in rugby, but it's really just a bunch of nerds holding microphones. Sorry, guys. Like, think of like an old school press conference, you know, where someone gets called on and they ask a question. And a lot of the questions were things like, hey, is Tully going to still be Sean Spears' manager? Or what's next for this guy? Or what's next for that guy? First of all, I got to give Rich Fan credit because he spoke up and asked a question about minority representation in AEW, and the fact that AEW is an organization that Ron Funches, when I interviewed him, talked about wanting to be part, wanting to be fan of something that he could be proud of. And as far as AEW's portrayal of minorities, I don't think anybody can have any complaints, but Rich Fan brought up something that I wouldn't even thought about as a white dude. You know, when he asked Tony Khan, what's up with representation of minorities, especially in the single scene, you start thinking, okay, well, there's really not a lot of people. It's a very good question. It's something we should examine. I'd love to have Rich on and talk about it, but it's the kind of question that the older guys, I don't think, would ask. And then Sean Ross Sapp brought up Kylie Rae. Now, Kylie Rae was in a Four Corners match on a pay-per-view for All Elite Wrestling, and now she's gone. She disappeared. And Sean Ross Sapp had the opportunity to ask a question, and he asked something real. What happened to this wrestler? And at the same time, it never probably would have come up unless Sean brought it up. And I heard Meltzer talking about it with Jim Valley, and Jim Valley said something like, respect her privacy, and Meltzer said, yeah. But that's not really what reporting is. It's, and I'm not saying we should dig into the details. If there's something terrible going on, nobody knows. I'm not super interested in it, but that's what journalists do. There's a wrestler who was on the pay-per-view who's now gone. Why don't we ask questions and find out what happened? And as far, and I don't blame Jim Valley for this, and I think he's a great addition to the Observer radio shows. I've never met him, but I think he's really good. I like to hear him on there. And I like the questions he asked. But so I don't blame him for saying respect your privacy. I do wonder why a journalist like Dave said, yeah, let's respect your privacy. Because this is a story that he would not give a pass to on somebody else. Like if it was WWE and a person disappeared, a guy or a girl disappeared off of their pay-per-view and nobody talked about it, and then he had to ask what happened, man, Dave Meltzer, the investigative reporter, or Wade Keller, the investigative reporter, would get to the bottom of this shit. But Sean Ross Sapp had the opportunity to ask a question, and he asked a real journalist question. And kind of as a result, I posted on Twitter, hey, who's the most credible, reliable, honest, trustworthy, unbiased wrestling news reporter today? We got a lot of Mike Johnsons. We got a few Daves. We got a lot of Wade Kellers. But the vast majority of people said Sean Ross Sapp. So I would say the second story this week is the tipping point in the younger wrestling journalists overtaking the older wrestling journalists. And perhaps someone just took the lead. And his name is Sean Ross Sapp. And the number one wrestling story of the week is the total domination of the news cycle by Chris Jericho this past week. Two things happened. They conflated together into just nonstop coverage of Chris Jericho. Of course, the first thing is the whole a little bit of the bubbly silliness, right? He just said it. He just off the cuff said it, and then someone put it, I believe the first person put it to Mambo number 5, and then a lot of people made songs. People made some really great songs. I even made a couple songs, but it was something that was trending worldwide, by the way, a little bit of the bubbly, getting the attention. At the same time, Chris Jericho's title belt goes missing, and let's talk about that a little bit. So basically, here is the story. A dude was scalloping. And that doesn't mean he was making potatoes. That means he was out looking for scallops. He was driving home. He saw a bag. Him and his wife were driving. His name is Frank, by the way. We're driving down Highway 20 on the edge of their town when he spotted what appeared to be a velvet bag in the middle of the turning lane. And he picked it up. He said the bag was scuffed. And while he didn't look inside until he got home, he could tell there was something heavy in it. When he finally opened the bag, he couldn't believe what he saw. He said, "Whoa, it's like a huge wrestling belt." Of course, he didn't really know that what AEW was, so he Googled it. This was, of course, before the internet knew about the missing belt. And Frank and his wife thought that the belt belonged to a kid or something, and they listed it in Craigslist in the lost and found section. But he also texted photos of the belt to his brother and a friend, and he started receiving replies to the Craigslist ad on Tuesday night with some linking him to the articles, a newspaper article in the Florida Tallahassee newspaper called the Tallahassee Democrat, which would not fly where I live, I'm just saying. And it was about the theft. Because it was considered a theft because Jericho himself said that the limo driver picked him up from the Millionaire Club in the airport, brought him to Longhorn Steakhouse, and then the limo driver was sent back because Jericho accidentally picked up the wrong luggage. When it came back, it was no longer there. So what kind of makes sense to me is that it's in a black bag probably. What makes sense to me is what Frank thought. And Frank's saying, "Well, I believe it was just left on the back of the limo and it flew off." Frank got a $200 reward from the limo company who's going to be on the hook for it. And that's that. That's the story. It wasn't stolen. It was somehow ended outside the limo, from the limo to the road. Your theory's as good as mine, but I think it just wasn't put in the trunk. I think it was just left on top of the car or left on the trunk, took a turn, it fell off. Luckily, Frank found it, and good for Frank, and good for the police, and good for everybody involved, and the limo driver, and everybody. But Jericho made the most of it. That's the point. He made a video about it. He tied in a little bit of the bubbly, and it was a thing that dominated the news cycle this week. And as we talked about on the start of the show, they did not sell out Full Gear right away, but that's not because of anything Jericho did. And they actually announced Jericho versus Cody. I gave you my thoughts on that on a previous episode. I think it's a great matchup, and I don't think Cody should get the hate because what the fuck? He should be on top. He's Cody. I mean, he's one of the reasons, one of the main reasons they are where they are. But the whole point is WWE is nowhere to be found on Twitter this week because Jericho dominated it. Whether it was just by happenstance or actually taking the happenstance and combining it with opportunism. And also, he has this talent for creating little lines, little memorable moments, whether you're on the list or whether you're an idiot or a gain or a little bit of the bubbly. And they dominated the news cycle. That's all people talked about this week. And that is the number one story from This Week in Wrestling on Total Engagement. Our top five stories: AEW doesn't sell out Full Gear instantly. The Killer Cross situation was number 4. The Rider shakeup in WWE was number 3. Wrestling had a tipping point for its journalism, and that's number 2. And Jericho dominates the news cycle. That's number 1. Guys, make sure to subscribe to Total Engagement. We're going to have daily shows. Make sure you check out the Nick Gage interview we did yesterday, and also all the shows we had this past week, including a StarCast review, a GCW review, an All Out review, and these were all in person. And stay tuned till tomorrow on Total Engagement on the MLW Radio Network.